All right, let's start off with this goofy art thing. I've said this before. I don't understand art. I mean, you look at certain things and you can see it's beautiful, that somebody has an unbelievable talent. Mm-hmm. But then you'll watch somebody put, you know, paint on their ass cheeks and press it up against a thing. And all of a sudden, this is worth $200K. It's like, what happened there? Mm-hmm. Is it because of who did it? And again, I'm not demeaning any of this stuff. I just don't understand it. I don't know what's worth what and why. You know, when you look at like baseball cards or things like that, or
I don't understand that,
but I'm just saying, like, sometimes it's rare that you'll find that, and you could say, mm-hmm. Oh, this is a one of one. I get it, but why is it important that it's so and so? Anyway, mm-hmm. Guy, a New York art dealer, is about to cash in after stumbling upon a valuable painting at a barn sale in the Hamptons. He bought a painting for $50. The painting was made by a well known Canadian artist, Emily Carr. It's worth about $200,000. This is insane. Like, have you guys ever gotten lucky like that where you bought something and you didn't realize how much it was worth? I mean, probably not to this extent. Anything?
No.
You were up? Yeah. No. I don't feel like I have either. Like, I've opened a pack of baseball cards and like, oh my God, I can't believe I got this and it was worth quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But again, that's just being lucky.
Yeah.
This is being in the right place at the right time, being lucky, or at least having some sort of acknowledgement of who Emily Carr is. But the painting looks like, I mean, I can only, it's a video, so I'll show you guys the picture real quick. That's the painting. Like, it doesn't look like anything. Wow. You get what I'm saying?
I totally get it.
It looks like a sleeping dog, and it's not even a good painting of a dog. And it might not even be a dog. It might be a dinosaur, for all I know. Whatever. You go figure.
But I don't, you know, it's just...
It's pretty stupid.
It just, you know, and I get offended with that. I bring back Ellsworth Kelly. I mean, the guy painted solid canvases. Just either solids or stripes on canvas, and they're worth, you know, they're for a fortune.
Who decides this? How much it's, I guess, whatever the market. Anyway. Let's get into, do you guys like horror movies? Like, scary movies is one thing, but do you like seeing the gore and the violence? Because I had a buddy that was big into horror films, and we used to talk about all this stuff, and he'd watch all these, like, I don't even want to call them B movies. They were so bad, horror movies, but they create different ways to try to make your stomach turn.
Yeah. No, I don't like them, actually.
Because you've actually seen some of this
stuff. That's exactly why.
Yeah.
I've seen so much of it in real life, I don't find it amusing. It's not entertainment to me.
Rob, have you? Or do you
I've never been a gory movie person.
So have you guys seen the pictures of Art the Clown?
Yeah.
This character here?
Yeah.
So he's in the movie The Terrifier, and The Terrifier 3 is coming out. I've seen the first two, which there's no rhyme or reason for anything. They don't even really explain where this guy's coming from, what he is. He just goes out and just starts murdering people. And you do not know how it's going to end, which is one of the things I love about it. It usually ends with him doing whatever the hell he wants.
Uh-huh.
And now they said that The Terrifier 3 is starting to open up, and it's out there. They're calling it the most terrifying film ever. UK premiere of the new horror sequel sees 11 people walk out in just 10 minutes after a traumatic opening scene. There's a scene in the first one where he basically saws a woman in half. She's tied up with her hands, and he saws her in half from down up and splits her, and they just show the whole thing going on, and it's like, are we just trying to outgross everyone?
Yes.
And the funny thing is, I still enjoy watching this, so I'm not talking down anyone. I'm just kind of curious if other people feel this way, because it is listed Terrifier 3. They provide sick bags for people that want to go in with it. Extreme violence and excessive gore.
Wow.
So this isn't something you would want to see, Ed?
Probably not.
But if it was on, would you like... You probably wouldn't turn it off.
I've watched these. I mean, I've watched them. You know, there's always movies that are so bizarre. Like, I'll get hooked by this probably. Because, all right, what's all the big? It was like Human Centipede.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I watched it. It was like, I heard so many awful things about it, and I watched it.
I couldn't get the taste out of my mouth.
Oh, burrito's so delicious. When you make it to South Park, you made it.
Joe, is any of this for you? Speaking of horror films, before I move on to the next story.
Hell to the gnaw. I absolutely hate horror films.
I can't wait to see it. I've watched...
It's supposed to be campy, though, at the same time. Like, it's supposed to be so shocking that it's almost funny.
Yeah.
And that Arthur Clown is hilarious. I think it's kind of hilarious, though, because they make memes that are putting him in other situations which are out of context, and it is kind of funny.
Yeah, so I'm sure you'll see a lot of people dressed up as Art the Clown this Halloween yet again. Is that what you're going to come as?
Maybe.
Then? Oh, there, look at that. All right, how about this story? Man allowed to visit girlfriend in prison for the first time since she cut off his penis for cheating on her with her niece, who was 15. We talked about this, guys. The age of consent in Brazil is 14 years old. And you can have sex with someone that's 12 to 13 years old if you're only up to 5 years older than them.
Right.
Prostitution is legal, but you can't have, you can't have brothels. I think you just have to work for yourself on the street. Public order and vacancy laws.
It gives new meaning to the word Uber Eats.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. Let me move on. All right, let's get back to this story. Good God. So, again, this is a loaded story. Gilberto de Oliveira, 40, had his male organ cut off by Diane Farias. She's 34, he's 40, in December of 2023 after she discovered him having sex with her 15-year-old niece. Now, this woman obviously went to prison. This is the first time he's going to visit her. So this is where things get like interesting for me, because I'm not sure how much I could love someone that cut off my member. Do you get what I'm saying?
You're not sure?
You're not positive about this?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think my Katie would ever do that. I mean, it wouldn't take very long. I'd probably still be asleep.
She'd be using nail clippers.
Where'd you put it? I can't find it anywhere. Is it under the blanket? Look for the blood. Where is it?
Hide and seek.
Put a tile on that thing.
It's my nubbin. But yeah, like, again, not expecting somebody to do that. I'm not going to sleep with her 15-year-old niece. But at the same extent, why do you want to go back and visit her?
Yeah, that's a horrific
one. I mean, is it like you want answers?
Maybe he's rubbing it in.
You go back.
Man at a boo boo.
I got your nose. That's what it would look like to me.
Maybe he's showing her pictures. That's me and your niece at the amusement park.
Beach.
That's
We're going to the beach today. It's going to be a beautiful day.
Exactly. You know, we don't know why he's visiting her.
However, the judge blocked the couple. They were going to have intimate relations at the prison over concerns that Oliveira could use his penis strap and kill Farias, the mother of his daughter. So apparently, I guess he's got something.
He's got a strap on. Oh, his head.
Oh. Do you want to see her? All right, I'll show you both of them.
This is so awful.
Here's a picture of her. I'll share this. By the way, this story will be at JCon Sports on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, I'd see building life with her.
Yeah, and there's, it's just, this whole thing is just disgusting. I mean, I remember the whole Lorena Bobbitt
story. You know what's interesting?
What?
You scroll through those photos, mm-hmm. She's not smiling in any of them.
No, she got crazy eyes.
That's a mean bitch there.
She's, well.
Look at her.
Yeah, she's got crazy eyes.
She's not smiling in one photograph, and there are pools and beaches and stuff.
Yeah. Oof. I know a photograph he's not smiling in. The one where his wang was cut off. I mean, this is, to go visit her and then even talk about having sex with her again. So they're going to be in separate rooms. There'll be a divider there with, glass protector. I'm trying to see if it said when she was going to get out, but it doesn't really say that in this article. So, again, at JCon Sports on Twitter, if you want to see it, that's your World of Stupid.
Mike Preston at 8:30, Melissa Kim at 9:15,
okay,
and Rick Ritter at 9:30. But on the other side, big weekend of college football on the horizon. Gonna look at it up next on The Fan. Big weekend of college football coming up on the horizon. And you said it was some trash games yesterday, Jeremy.
I mean, look. To be fair, I don't know how many people are staying up to watch Texas State or Sam Houston State go at it.
Tonight on Fox at 9 o'clock, tonight I said,
mm-hmm.
You got Michigan State versus Oregon in a Big Ten matchup. I know that sounds weird.
Sounds weird.
Oregon is 1-0 in the Big Ten. Michigan State 1-1. Oregon is ranked 6th in the country at 6-0. Also, yeah, on FS1 at 9 o'clock, you got Syracuse at 3-1 versus the undefeated UNLV football team at 4-0. And we know what's going on with the quarterback situation at UNLV.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the players were pissed off at the QB for leaving, you know?
Okay. I mean,
players who weren't getting NIL.
I mean, he's the one that signed the bad deal. He ain't get paid.
Were you getting your money? All right, I'm not. I'm out.
Hey, look. It's his prerogative what he wants to do, and I think it's the player's prerogative to be upset with him.
And it's my right not to care.
And it's my prerogative. Oh, I'm not going to keep doing that.
Ole Miss coming off a bad loss. Like a lot of people are beating up Lane Kiffin right now. Bad loss for them. They take on South Carolina on Saturday at 3:30 in Columbia, South Carolina. 4-1 Ole Miss, 0-1 in the conference. 3-1 South Carolina, 1-1 in the conference.
Yeah.
This could be a problem.
For who?
Ole Miss.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I agree. I think Ole Miss wins the game. But I think South Carolina surprised some people. I don't know. Actually, I don't. But I think that, Ole Miss prevails. But I think South Carolina is better than expected.
I know this sounds weird again, But UCLA 0-2 in the Big Ten travels to Beaver Stadium to take on Penn State, Jeremy. Mm-hmm. Penn State's undefeated, ranked 7th in the country. And look, they're favored by 28.
Yeah.
Well, here's what we get into with the Pac-12, Pac-10 teams joining the Big Ten. It's a noon game for UCLA. How is that fair to them to play basically what's a 9 a.m. game to them their time? And I go into this, the travel coming across and then all of a sudden playing a game this early. I don't want to say last time, but the one time that really stood out is when Maryland played Cal. Mm-hmm. Maryland wasn't in Cal's class at all that year, and I understand they went to a bowl game and everything. Mm-hmm. They beat the ever-loving snot out of Cal so much so that Javid Best was throwing up in the back of the end zone. I just think it's a difficult thing. Like we've talked about Thursday night football in the NFL, home field advantage there. It's huge. The same thing with being on the East Coast and playing a West Coast team at noon.
You know what's interesting about this game, the UCLA-Penn State game? Rob said they're 28-point favorites. The over-under is only 46.5.
Yeah.
That means they expect Penn State to just beat the crap out of them. You know, like
I always love those because I used to tell people all the time, and don't do this, but I used to tell them all the time, it's like when you see those big favorites and you like that favorite, just parlay it with the over. I can't tell you how many times they've won 45-0.
Yeah. I can see it happening here, though.
Yeah.
It's 40-3 or something.
But, Rob, the game I want to see and where I think it's not an upset, but some will call it that, is A&M in Missouri.
That's what I'm looking
at. A&M's a 2.5-point favorite at home against a Missouri team that nobody, I don't want to say nobody, a lot of people weren't talking about. Missouri's really good, but it's a bad spot to be playing A&M here in this particular matchup. And I agree with Rob. Like, when you start talking about the SEC, going on the road and winning in the SEC is unbelievably tough.
Mm-hmm.
The crowds are into it, even when their teams aren't great. They show up, they show out because they know they have their, whatever it is, 10 to 13 games a year that they're going to be able to see. Obviously, some bowl games and things like that. But when it's a home game, they're going to be there.
I know the only real win they have, you could say, was Minnesota. They beat them 31-14. But Iowa at 3-1 travels to Ohio State. Tomorrow. Your thoughts on that game?
I think Ohio State beats their ass.
Yeah.
Iowa's offense is just absolutely dreadful. Ohio State has a chance. I don't even like saying this because that LSU team that Joe Burrow was on offensively was ridiculous. And you look at all the talent that went to the NFL, you got to check out the freshman receiver that Ohio State has. He's already come in. Like, he went from his first game catching his first touchdown to all of a sudden being one of the most dominant receivers in college football. I definitely think Ohio State should handle business against this Iowa team.
You mentioned about how tough it is to win on the road in the SEC. Now, Tennessee is 4th in the country going to Arkansas, unranked.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee is only, I'm surprised, he's 13.5-point favorites. I mean, that's substantial, but they're in Arkansas. What do you think?
Arkansas has a good offense. I mean, they can score. They can put up points. The big question is, will they get stops against Tennessee? Tennessee is the team that I'm not sure. And, Rob, you tell me if you feel differently. They look really good. I need to see them against an upper echelon opponent and see them look this way before I'm finally going to go, yeah, Tennessee's legit and they could make a run for the national championship. Yeah, right now, I probably got 5 teams that I think could win the national championship in my bucket. And then you're kind of seeing, are there other teams that I could add? Yeah. Now, granted, with the playoff format, there's way more than
playoffs.
5 teams could win it. Yeah, but I just think this Saturday is going to be, there's a lot of good, not great games this weekend.
We all look
it. No, there are, because I was looking for Texas and like, Yeah.
We all agree that Gunnar Henderson is a Southern gentleman, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the nicest guys you can meet. What does it take for him to stop in his tracks and side-eye you with anger?
You talk about Auburn?
That's what I did a couple weeks ago.
Mm.
And Auburn now traveling to Sanford Stadium in Athens after Georgia's coming off of a loss. Georgia, I think, just scored.
Are there any rivalries in that locker room with college sports? I'm trying to remember where everybody went. Because baseball, you don't think about it as much.
I mean, they played against each other?
Well,
I don't think so.
Just where you went to school. Because there's a lot of guys. I could see a lot of baseball players coming out of South Carolina, coming out of Vanderbilt, coming out of Tennessee, LSU, and those rivalries.
Westbrook's an SEC guy. I don't think any other SEC guys are in the locker room.
We got a couple of Arkansas guys.
Well, besides.
Who else is Arkansas?
Kerstead.
Yeah, that's right. Kerstead is Arkansas.
So there is a robbery. Yeah, there is a robbery.
It'd be nice. I know, we're not privy to all the things. And you mentioned Gunnar never even went to Auburn, but he was committed to go there.
And
before.
He's a big Auburn fan.
Yeah, growing up in that area. So, like, I think some of that stuff's cool when you get to hear about
it. He stopped in his tracks and side-eyed me when I talked about Auburn football.
Did you start talking? Did you know he was behind you and start talking louder so he would hear you?
No, I went to his locker.
Hey,
I went to his locker.
Gunner, Auburn stinks.
They just came off of a loss to Cal. I said, Cal? And I ain't talking about Ripken. That's when he side-eyed me. He picked up on it. I said, dude,
how does
you
that
lost
happen?
At home to Cal. Yeah, I know. How? How?
They had a bad experience.
Oh, boy. College football starts. Everything opens up. Daily Line with Jeremy Carter at 9 o'clock. Melissa Kim at 9:15.
Okay. Sorry, I missed your okay again.
I take two.
Oh, we got to do this again?
Daily Line at 9 o'clock. Melissa Kim at 9:15.
Okay.
Mike Preston joins us. The professor is in up next on The Fan.
This isn't Dirty Dancing. I carried the watermelon.
So you carried the what?
I carried the what? Don't you dare. It's in the movie. She carried the watermelon. Baby did. And they were singing this song. Otis was.
Mike Preston. BubbaSun.com. What's up, Mike?
Man, you need to kill Jeremy.
I know, man. I know, man.
I heard Ed snickering in the background. I was like, yeah, Ed they caught on. Come on, watermelon, playing that song. Jeremy, you ought to know better, man.
Just give me the winners.
Mike, the Baltimore Ravens taking on the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm going to ask you a question that Joe put together for today's show. Does Cincinnati's desperation and the need to win now concern you a little bit for this game?
No.
All right.
Because
next question.
Here's the thing for me. If you can't run the ball and you can't stop the run, you're probably not going to win. And they can't do either one of those right now. And that's why the Ravens are favorites going into this game. So they can have all of that incentive. It's an AFC North game, rah, 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 rah. Hey, you got to be physical. It's a physical game. It's football. And I don't see with the Bengals.
I don't think the Bengals either. They give up 145 yards a game. The Ravens, on the other side, only give up 58. I don't think the Bengals can run against the Ravens, as you said. I think the Ravens are going to have a huge day on the ground. Therefore, they're going to eat the clock up, dominate time of possession. I think they walk away with this game pretty easily.
Well, the only thing that they have is a quick strike offense.
Mm-hmm.
They got Burrow, they got Chase, they got Higgins. They can get up and down the field. But, hey, man, when your offense is sitting over there on the sideline and you're watching the game, that's a tough sell. And Joe Burrow is not Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is one of the few guys who had a pass rush on the other side, but he didn't have much of a defense. But he could score points. Joe Burrow is not Peyton Manning, and it ain't even close. So I agree with you, Ed. I'm with you.
You can't score from the sideline. That's where he's going to be most of the game.
Well, to be fair, there's only one Peyton Manning, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time. So kind of hard to match up with him.
Hey, Jeremy, no words from you, watermelon man.
Hey, man, just give me the damn report card already. What do you got? You getting A's, C's, D's? What's on it? Hey, you mentioned a quick strike, and again, how do you think they defend Ja'Marr Chase? Because obviously when you look at that offense, he's got to be the guy you're most worried about.
Well, that's why they went and drafted the guy number one, quarterback, Wiggins. All right? And believe me, he's going to have some problems because he's still a hands-on guy. You watch him play, he's back in college at times. Likes to get very physical, knowing that you can't do that anymore in the NFL. But he has the speed. And that's something that Marlon Humphrey found out a couple years ago. Remember when Chase just kept surpassing him and running 40, 50 yards? But they finally got a speed guy. And I think he'll be okay. I mean, that's the guy I would match up with him because he's already matched up with some of the best receivers out there in the first two games. So we'll see what happens, but at least they have this guy now. Brandon Stevens is not that guy. Their safeties, they aren't those kind of guys that can match up with the speedster. So they have him now. So that's a good matchup going into the game.
Mike Preston joins us, Baltimore Sun, BaltimoreSun.com. Mike, Mark Andrews, lots been said about him not having a lot of targets. Even Lamar Jackson chimed in this week and called him a team player. But we know how Harbs does. Whenever negative attention goes to something, he gets rid of that negative attention by doing the opposite. Does Mark Andrews get multiple targets on Sunday?
Early. Early.
Yeah.
Got to get him involved. And, you know, and I wrote about that a little bit this week. He's the only guy that can actually demand the ball. I mean, likely he had a good year last year, but not there yet. Flowers can be there. Aguilar, he's on the downside of his career, so there's really one guy, you know, one diva you got to take care of. That's Mark Andrews. And he would get taken care of. Remember, we've been through this before where he complained, and then the next game he comes out and five straight targets, boom, 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 boom. Well, I could see that happening again. But, again, their bread and butter, and to me it comes down to matchups. All right, the Ravens' offense is diversified. All right, they can run the football, but they couldn't do it in the first two games because they were playing against teams who had good defensive lines. All right, then you come out, you play Dallas. They're not very good. Buffalo, they're not very good. Cincinnati's not very good. And going in, you said, this is how we're going to attack this thing, and we're going to run the football. And that should be the game plan this week. And if you don't catch a lot of passes, so be it. All right? But, you know, he will take care of Mark Andrews. You can believe that.
Kyle Van Noy, second in the NFL in sacks behind Aiden Hutchinson. A lot of people credited Clowney with his success last year. What do you think has caused his success? He's looking really good. And because it's not just that. If you go deeper in the stats with the hurries and the hits, he's having a really good season as a pass rusher. Did he just have a rebirth? Was he just in better shape, or was it just scheme? Like, what do you think is happening here at his kind of advanced age?
There's this guy named Chuck Smith.
Yes.
Over there how many years before Chuck Smith came along, did we talk about the pass rush wasn't very good?
Mm-hmm.
3-4 years, 5 years deep, and then all of a sudden he gets there and Clowney making money again, and then Kyle Van Noy is the guy. It's the coach.
Yeah.
He teaches the techniques, and you go out there and watch training camp and you watch this guy, he doesn't stop teaching. I mean, he's always up in their faces, working technique, different drills, and, you know, I just go out there and watch him because I think he's incredible.
You know, it's funny, Mike. I had dinner with Michael McCrary years ago talking about the pass rush, and we got into football and pass rushing. He said he wanted to teach hand fighting because it's so much more to pass rushing than just what it looks like. They resisted, but apparently they finally gave in because that's exactly what's going on here. I'm glad you answered it that way.
Yep, and you know, Mike was the kind of guy, you know, they have that fighter jet stuff going on around the league where they're teaching these guys to move hands real quick and leverage. The Ravens didn't have that. And you are correct. Mike McCray wanted to come back, but the Ravens kind of said, nah, we don't want that.
Yep.
Well, they needed it.
Yeah.
And now they got it. They got it.
All right, love man. Who wins this game and why? What's your score?
Well, the watermelon brother here said,
Jesus.
The Ravens win. They'll put up 33, 34 points. They'll beat them 34, 21, 23, something like that.
You got to beat down two. I got 27-17. Ed, you have?
31-17.
Jeremy?
I don't remember. What did I have?
27-23.
27-23.
You didn't write it down?
Why would I?
You got me.
You going to remember? No,
you don't remember.
Here, I'm writing it down now. 27-23.
Mike Preston, are you going to Cincinnati?
Yes, I got to get away from as far away from Jeremy as I can.
Get some of that nasty-ass chili, Mike. That sweet-ass Skyline chili.
Good thing about Skyline chili, it looks the same going down and coming out.
Okay, guys. I'm out, man.
Mike, have a good one, man. It looks the same. That changed.
When Mike comes in next week, we'll have to do the lift from Dirty Dancing.
Oh, yeah. But who's doing it?
He's going to have to. My back is shot. He's going to have to let me fall.
Melissa Cry Kim joins us at 9:15. Rick Renner joins us at 9:30. But on the other side, Brandon Hyde said on Thursday he supports the way the team transitions younger players from the minors to the majors. But how do you feel about that process? Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan.
I think that our process is good. I think that we're going to look at it. I think we're going to evaluate a lot of things this offseason. Me and Mike are going to work closely on that. But we believe in our young players, and we're really talented. They've shown, you know, especially in the first half, we've scored a ton of runs.
Yeah, that's Brandon Hyde. But I got to tell you, next hour, we're giving away some Thomas Rhett tickets. So if you want to, two per of them, apparently, is what Joe told me. So next hour, when we tell you to call in, make sure you call in and get yourself a per tickets.
There you go. Brandon Hyde defending the way the team brings up youngsters. And again, this goes to, you know, people questioning why they slow roll these guys. How to work out for Adley Rutschman overall? Adley Rutschman struggled down the stretch. I believe injury, we'll find that out. But overall, how to work for him? Pretty good?
Yeah.
How to work for Gunnar Henderson?
Pretty good.
How to work for Colton Cowser?
He's going to win Rookie of the Year, most likely.
I mean, so how to work for Jordan Westberg?
It's pretty good. If they call him up at a normal time, he probably gets Rookie of the Year.
So why are we questioning? Why do we keep questioning what these guys do when it keeps working out pretty good?
Because you have the one so far that it's just people are just looking at the fact of what's happened with Jackson Holiday, what happened with Kobe Mayo when he got called up, what happened with Kierstead, even though like you can't predict a concussion and how it's going to affect the guy because he had just started hitting then.
Yeah.
But again, you need something to nitpick. You need something to point at. You need a scapegoat. And anytime something goes wrong, people they got to be tired of hearing me say this. Like, one team wins the World Series. Yeah. One team. Like, everybody else's season can be considered a failure at the end of the year. But again, we go back to this. You have a very young team, so you have to bring them along somehow, some way. You're going to have tough business decisions to make. Like, for example, we've talked about this. I think Heston Kierstead was supposed to be Santander's replacement. When this time came, he was supposed to slide right in. We have questions about his defense. We didn't get to see him enough. And look, Santander's a fan favorite. We don't know if they're going to try to re-sign him or not. But when it comes down to this stuff, people just want to point out, oh, you brought up Jackson Holiday too soon. Well, this isn't a team that's rushing guys to the majors anymore. They're letting them get their seasoning, if that's what you want to call it, in the minor leagues and then calling them up when it makes sense.
I mean, in terms of Jackson Holiday, it's about how you finish, right? And I'm looking at Jackson Holiday's the last 14 days that he played. He batted .364 with a .921 OPS and 2 RBI.
Got to do it the whole season for fans.
I understand that, but you got to grow up. And I just don't understand how we're questioning the process of these guys when they produce so many successful young players, man.
How do you keep
questioning
and successful seasons because of it? Like, what? It's just so frustrating.
How is it that we still talk about this stuff when, oh my God, I can't believe this is the lineup? How do people still not understand that there's a thing versus lefty pitchers and righty batters and righty pitchers and lefty batters going on? There's a big difference in facing. Like, people are acting like, I can't believe this guy's in the lineup. Well, he's right-handed and the other guy's left-handed. Well, he's better. Well, is he better against left-handed pitching? Go look at it.
And that's Heston Kierstead. Okay, you talked about the concussion. He played 39 games this year. He had 114 plate appearances. 114 plate appearances. He batted .253, on-base percentage of .351, slugging of .394. He's got to bring that up. But an OPS of .745 with four home runs and 14 RBI. How's that horrible?
You know what I hope? I hope they do sign Santander to some sort of deal that's not ridiculous. And that they make, Kierstead, essentially their DH and their rotation piece in the outfield. Not a full-time DH because he's young. You don't need to do that with him. He can still play. You want to see him get better out there. He's not going to get better if he's just sitting the bench. But, you know, I think there's a chance that Ryan O'Hearn's not back next year. I think there's a chance there's a bunch of guys like James McCann. We don't know if Santander's back. A lot of things to look at. You're going to have to rely on these young guys. Like, where does Kobe Mayo play? They're saying his best position is first base. He can play some third, and eventually they think he might end up in the outfield. We got a lot of outfielders.
Yeah,
Jackson Holiday might wind up in the outfield. And for people that want him to go out and sign free agent players and bring in a vet, where are they playing? You tell me the position you have him for.
Let's go to Dundalk, get Johnny. What's up, Johnny?
Fellas, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Rob, you guys did a little exercise a couple weeks ago where you brought up Santander and Burns, and who would you sign? I was just curious. With the wild card round, have your guys' opinions changed at all?
Mine hadn't, because my opinion was based on signability, not on preference. I mean, it's going to take $35, $40 million a year to sign Burns. Why? Because Gerrit Cole is making $36 million a year. That's what it's going to take. It's not going to take that much to sign Santander. You're not – the Orioles, even spending more money, aren't paying $35 to $40 million a year on a pitcher.
If you had your preference,
I don't go with preference. I go with signability. This isn't fantasy baseball. This is reality. Stop trying to pin me to an answer that you want me to say.
Just answer the man's question for crying out loud.
Well, I'm not. I don't want to pay a pitcher $35 to $40 million a year.
That's all you had to say.
That's it. I mean, I would love to have him if the price was right, but the price is not right. I mean, you give somebody an answer that, well, your preference. Well, my preference is based on what I know it's going to cost.
Look, I'd rather, if you're sitting here and all things being equal, I'd rather have the starting pitcher every single time.
Yeah.
Just because of how important it is and how difficult it is to find front end starting pitching. But at the same time, Rob's 100% right. Like, we don't know what their business model is yet and what they're willing to spend. Does signing a Burns and signing a Santander eliminate the fact that you could probably sign a Rutschman, in which now people are like, oh, who cares? Rutschman stunk in the second. He's going to be fine.
He's eligible for arbitration next year, too.
He's going to be fine.
So that's going to be interesting. He's eligible for arbitration. I don't know what he's going to make.
He's going to make quite a bit.
He's going to make some change, man.
I mean, he's an all-star in back-to-back years.
I would say twice, yes.
For those of you wondering why Rutschman won't just sign a contract, wait until arbitration comes. And that'll show you why he didn't just sign a contract. You got to pay me.
He's the one, though, that looks like it would be easier to get a deal with because of his position, how other catchers have been signed, and also his agent. His agent's not Boris.
Tony and Rosedale. What's up, Tony?
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Hey, why is it such a foregone conclusion that the Orioles are not going to sign Burns?
I mean,
if they want to be contenders, they got to sign somebody like that. They have to.
I don't see them spending $35 to $40 million, Tony. That's why it's not a foregone conclusion. It's just based on the business model. I don't see them spending that kind of money on a pitcher.
And, oh, by the way, you get a first-round pick back if he walks. You do. And then people can say what they want. There's value in it, especially with the team that hits on their draft picks.
It's like, you know, you're upset with us for saying this, but we're just going by the business model that we've seen from the Baltimore Orioles.
And by the way, the draft pick they get back for Corbin Burns, if he walks, is the same area where they drafted Gunnar Henderson. Does that mean you're going to find another Gunnar Henderson there? No. Jordan Westberg drafting that. Like, you look at that grouping, you can find some good talent there, and depending on how you fluctuate how much money you have to spend.
I didn't think so. Adley Rutschman isn't Boris.
No, I said he wasn't.
Oh, I thought you said he was.
No, I'm saying okay. He's an easier signing because you. It's not Boris.
I thought, when you said snot, I thought you said Scott.
Did you say snot?
Snot Boris.
Yeah, he said because he's not. Because it's not Boris, I thought you said because of Scott Boris.
Maybe you should shut the hell up and listen better.
My ears are clogged up.
Who are you signing, Burns or Santander? Tell us now, damn it. Pick one. Stop straddling the fence, Mr. Oriole. Sorry. All right, let me settle down now.
Well, based on signability, screw you. You're not. Honestly, do you think they signed Corbin Burns?
No.
Why?
Because if you're looking at what they're doing and what they've been doing, it doesn't fit the model. Now, that doesn't mean that Rubenstein, which one is it?
Stein.
Keep it moving.
Okay. It doesn't mean he won't come in and say, hey, look, we got to keep this guy. Let's spend money if you want to. But they might have an idea where they want to allocate money. And oh, by the way, how old is Burns?
He's 31, I think.
How many years does he want? Like, you can't just sit here and say, go sign Burns because you need to have him back. What if he wants 7 years? Are you doing that?
Do you think they'll sign Santander?
I don't think they sign either one of them, personally.
Burns is just 30. He'll be 30.
Okay. Do you want to give him a 6 or 7 year deal?
I would.
Okay.
If I had $40 million to spend as a team, I'd give him six years because I know he's going to give me 4.
So let me just say this. And
I would.
He could be the opposite of this, but all of the long-term pitching contracts that have been signed thus far outside of Max Scherzer have not worked out the way that you would
want
to.
Max Scherzer was a discount.
Yeah. For what he did.
For what he did for the Nationals, that was a discount.
What seriously. You saw from Garrett Cole the past 2 years, is he a good pitcher? Yes. But is he trending down? Yes. Do you want to have that type of contract locked up with a team like this? The Yankees can afford to do it.
Is it time for the Daily Line?
Yes. Sure. All right, we're going to get into it. Tell you what, last night was a good night. All the plays I gave out yesterday hit. So if you played them, congrats. I'll give you a couple. We have college football. We have WNBA tonight. WNBA is going to have my favorite play on the evening. And what in the earth? We have our first NHL regular season game before all the other preseason games. We'll talk about it as New Jersey takes on Buffalo, and I'll give you a play
baseball
for that.
Baseball did that.
Huh?
Baseball did that.
Rob, I ain't talking to your ass.
Saying, I'm baseball,
man, this is my turn to tell you about what's coming up. What's coming up is Rob not talking. Stay tuned.